Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Dear listeners, loving Sairams and greetings from Prashanti Nilayam, the spiritual capital of the entire universe. Offering myself at Bhagwan's lotus feet, this is Raghu from Team Radio Sai, welcoming you all for today's Morning Glory session of Thursday Live. Well, dear listeners, Sister Karuna is away from the studio this morning, but she has lined up a thought-provoking interview for your inspiration and listening pleasure on Morning Glory. Today is 5th of November and the time right now in our studio is 9:40 a.m. and the weather here at Prashanti Nilayam Ashram is very pleasant. Right now, the chanting of Sai Gayatri that you just heard is continuing in Sai Granth Hall and Swami's devotees have lined up for the darshan of the Divine Mahasamadhi. Well, dear listeners, many of us use the term boomerang and even understand roughly what it means, right? Today, a devotee of Baba, who is a world-class professional in this sport or art, speaks to Radio Sai's Bishop Prishti about boomerang's deeper relevance. Yes, Mr. Paul Bryden explores the underlying principle of boomerang in daily life as what goes around, boomerangs around. So, today on Morning Glory, over now to Mr. Paul Bryden in conversation with Radio Sai's Bishop Prishti. And dear listeners, this conversation will be followed by a selection of Radio Sai audio specials that are part of our 90th year of Divine Advent offerings. Please enjoy the show.
Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to Tryst with Divinity, our series of conversations with people who have been touched by the love of Bhagwan Baba. Today is February 4th, 2015, and in the studios, we have a special guest, Mr. Paul Bryden, a former Australian boomerang throwing champion who has spent 30 years of his life making, throwing and teaching the art and sport of boomerangs. For those of you who are not aware of what is a boomerang is a thrown tool typically constructed as a flat aerofoil that is designed to spin about an axis perpendicular to the direction of its flight. It is some sort of a tool that, in a manner of sorts, has wings which flies, and a returning boomerang is designed to return to the thrower. And it is well known as a weapon used by indigenous Australians for hunting. Boomerangs have been historically used for hunting as well as for sport and entertainment, and they are commonly thought of as an Australian icon. In fact, in the English lexicon you have this word, and whenever boomerang is used, we have it to explain the phenomenon of something coming back. When we say something boomeranged, it means something that returned to us. So, a boomerang, it's a very mystical tool and it is very ancient. And the story of Mr. Paul's association with boomerang began in 1976 when he was teaching at the Mayuna Bay Sport and Recreation Center on Lake Macquarie near Newcastle, New South Wales, Australia. During that year, he made his first boomerang. He taught hundreds of school children how to throw, and the boomerang became his window to Aboriginal culture. Mr. Paul began throwing demonstrations in the 1980s, and he won his first Australian championship title in this sport in 1983. And interestingly, he won subsequently 6 more Australian championship events, and twice he represented Australia. And he has thrown and taught people to throw this amazing little instrument of boomerang in many places, including in Argentina, in Chile, in Brazil, France, Germany, England, Netherlands, USA, Canada, South Korea, Thailand, India, Japan, New Zealand, Australia, and the list goes on. He's been featured on television and in magazines, in commercials and tourism videos, and sponsored to events across the globe. Some of the highlights of his boomerang career are, he performed for 40,000 rugby fans at the Bledisloe Cup match in Auckland, New Zealand. He taught the mayors of Sydney and San Francisco how to throw boomerang successfully. He appeared as Aussie Show Compere and Mr. Boomerang at Canadian National Exhibition in Toronto. He has entertained thousands of Incentive Travel Group Corporate Achievers to Australia. Incentive Travel Group Corporate Achievers to Australia. He's been featured in Sanitarium Cornflakes Australia-wide promotion. And in September 1983, Mr. Paul founded Bennelong Boomerangs to teach the fun and ancient skills of boomerang throwing to international tourist groups. He also began to sell handmade authentic boomerangs. In December 1998, Paul founded Boomerangs Down Under, which was a trading name of Bennelong Boomerangs Private Limited. This was in Alice Springs in Northern Territory in Australia, where he supplied boomerangs to local galleries and hosted throwing lessons. And in July 2008, he launched the website www.boomerangsdownunder.com. So it's been an exciting and a beautiful journey with this little instrument, which is so simple, so natural, and so light, and something which actually brings a sparkle in anyone's eye when you see it, because it creates wonder in you. In fact, what comes to my mind is the flute of Lord Krishna. The flute also is made of bamboo and simple wood, but from it comes out such beautiful music. It's a very, very simple instrument, but it gives so much joy. Similarly, the boomerang is a very, very simple tool, but it brings so much joy, and it has very profound lessons, just like the flute has. And the most important thing, the most significant thing about Mr. Paul, and the reason we have him here today, is that he has had this unique opportunity of taking this beautiful instrument to Bhagwan. He has thrown boomerang in front of Bhagwan. Not only that, Swami gave him the opportunity of teaching how to throw the boomerang to his students. So, and it, in fact, it was part of the annual sports and cultural meet in 1994. He taught Bhagwan's students this art and science of throwing boomerangs, and it was one of the items, as I mentioned, that was presented in front of Bhagwan during the sports meet in 1994. In fact, I had the opportunity to see the video of that event before we started this, came here for this conversation, and it is definitely something which is an interesting chapter in Bhagwan's association with students, and it is clearly by Bhagwan's design that we have here in the studios today Mr. Paul Bryden, someone who has had the opportunity of interacting with Bhagwan from Australia, someone who had the chance to teach Bhagwan's students about this beautiful instrument, and someone in whose life Bhagwan's message has boomeranged time and again. So with a lot of joy and happiness, I welcome you, Mr. Paul, to the studios of Radio Sai.
Thank you very much. Wonderful to be here.
So what brings you back to Prashanthanilam in 2015?
Yes, it's been a long journey, hasn't it, from 1993 to 2015. I've come back to Prashanti to see the village, to see old friends on the staff, and again I've had the opportunity to teach some boomerang throwing to...
Oh, you did that?
Yes, I did that this time again. They were graduate students, and we had three consecutive afternoons of lessons in the Hillview Stadium. And the other reason for coming back is always that heart-to-heart connection with Swami, of course, and I have an affinity with Indian people. I feel at home here as well. And it's always good to get back because Prashanthanilam is a meeting place.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, people from all over the world come here.
Yes.
And we reconnect with some of our old friends. We may not see them for years, but then we see them in the street and we instantly know that they are Sai brothers and sisters, which is a wonderful aspect of the oneness that Swami teaches.
Beautiful. So my first question is, how was it interacting with the students, teaching them boomerang this time?
This was wonderful. They were keen to do it. They fitted it in, even though exams started a few days later. They have a special play and games period in the afternoons, and the sports director was able to arrange it all very, very quickly. And they were as enthusiastic, as keen, as interested as all the other students have been since 93.
Wow. So your journey with Bhagwan goes back to 1993, and you mentioned that it has always been a heart-to-heart connection with Bhagwan. So tell us, how did this connection begin?
My first introduction to Swami was a reading I had with a lady who gave me a small photograph and some vibhuti after this reading. And I just put it aside. In those days, I was very busy with my boomerang business in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few years later, I was in London.
Mm-hmm.
And there I read The Holy Man and the Psychiatrist.
Okay.
This was 1993.
Mm-hmm.
And I met a friend there, Louise Illig, and she introduced me to that book and to Swami's teachings because she had already been to Prashanti. And that was my introduction, in reading form at least, and her telling me stories about his life and his message, and I was very, very interested in that.
So you were very interested in Bhagwan when you read that book, Holy Man and Psychiatrist. What were your initial impressions about him?
I think the first thing to say is that I've always been interested in spiritual subjects.
Okay.
Back in my early 20s, I read Autobiography of a Yogi.
Okay.
Yogananda's classic book,
yes.
We all know.
Yes.
And so reading spiritual material was not strange to me at all. And then when I read this book and found that here was the avatar in human form, bringing us the message to try and progress on the spiritual path and go back to divinity, then I was very, very interested in that. And it looked as though here was someone we could visit. And that's how the story started of my... That was in 93. That's how the story started of my journey to come here for the first time.
So you came in that year to Prashanthanilam.
Yes, yes.
So how did that happen?
Well, Louise had an idea to make a film about the first super speciality hospital. And I had some film experience in Australia. And so we teamed up to make a program. And we met Professor Critchlow. We met Dr. Sophia. And everything happened, I presume, as Swami wanted it to happen when we came here. And so that's why we came at that time, to see him, to learn about his teachings on the spot, and then later we returned to do more of the filming in early 94.
So what memories do you have of your first encounter with Bhagwan?
Well, we arrived here for afternoon darshan from Bangalore. And so we got ready and went to darshan, and I was sitting in just the third row. In those days, it was the Mandir. There was no Sai Kulwant Hall, of course.
It was the day of sands.
Yeah, sitting on the sand and a bit of concrete there sometimes. And so I saw Swami come in through the lady's side in that beautiful orange-coloured robe, gracefully almost floating across in front of the ladies, taking letters from them, then to the men's side, taking some letters. And then he, on the men's side also, someone held up a tray of sweets. He picked up a handful and threw them, and I caught one.
Oh, you caught one?
Yes. So I felt very happy.
Mm.
I was delighted. I mean, this was my first visit to an ashram, my first visit to India, and here I am catching a sweet from the avatar.
So you believed he's an avatar?
Well, I read that book.
And you believed him?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I didn't find that strange at all. As I said, I've always been interested in spiritual subjects. So that felt a natural progression for me to move into and come and visit here.
Oh, yes. Wow.
Mm.
That's interesting.
Mm.
You read about him and you believed in him. And the first darshan, he gifts you with a sweet. So that's how the sweet journey began.
Yes, that's well said. Yes, it is a sweet journey. Yes.
So tell us the other memories, the other sweet memories of that trip.
Mm. Well, a few days later, I was staying down in Shed 20, one of the men's sheds where now some north buildings are.
Yes.
And one afternoon, I was sitting outside, and the former high school principal and registrar, Professor Lakshmi Narasimham,
yes,
and the warden of that time, Shiva Shankara Sai.
Yeah.
Shiva Shankara Sai. He's now, of course, the head of physics.
Yes.
They came down to me and said, Swami wants to meet you tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock at the Punachandra Auditorium. Please bring your boomerangs.
Mm-hmm. So you had mentioned to them about the boomerangs that you have.
I had mentioned it to the high school principal.
You had mentioned.
I had mentioned that because I always carry them around. I've been to so many countries. I always take enough boomerangs to give a demonstration.
Okay.
So I brought them here as well.
Mm.
I mentioned it to him.
Mm.
And then I went to the Punachandra the next day, and there was a Saivadal there, of course, because Swami was inside. And I said to him, I've got to see Swami this morning.
Mm-hmm.
He looked at me, and I'm sure he was thinking, oh, here's another Westerner thinking he has an interview, a personal interview with Sai Baba. But of course I did, and minutes after that the roller door went up and I was ushered into the room, to the hall.
Mm-hmm.
300 boys plus Swami.
Mm-hmm. So there was a session there.
He was having a session where he was adjudicating some of the boys who were giving small talks and preparing speeches for further later productions.
Okay.
That's what was happening, yes. Mm-hmm. So he was sitting down on the floor on a swivel chair and the boys were up on stage one by one.
Mm.
And so I spent quite a long time there. I was invited to throw.
Oh, okay.
Yes, in the actual Punachandra Auditorium.
Oh, so you threw in the Punachandra Auditorium.
Inside.
That's huge space, so
no
problem.
In that building. We moved the 300 boys to the side and began to throw. But before that, Swami looked at the boomerangs.
Oh, okay.
And
did he take them into his hands?
He took them into his hands and he said, very nice, very nice. And we have a photo of that on that website.
Yes.
That you mentioned. And so I did the throwing. I stayed. I was invited to have lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, remember, this is the first time I've been to the ashram and met Swami. The boys said, ask Swami to bless your boomerang throwing.
Mm.
Okay, so I didn't quite know what that meant, but within 30 seconds he was standing in front of me.
Mm.
I clasped my hands together, looked up, and said, Swami, would you please bless my boomerang throwing? He tapped me on the right cheek and said, I will see you in the morning.
Okay.
Yeah. A few minutes later, the boy said, take a photo of Swami, take a photo. So I had my camera. I held the camera up to him because by now he was up on stage, and he nodded. And then he posed for some photos, holding the back of a chair and looking down. And
oh, he posed for you?
He posed for me, yes.
Wow.
So those photos haven't been seen in public, actually. They're just in my collection.
Wow. They're still with you?
They're still with me, of course.
Beautiful.
So it was a wonderful experience in the Poonachandra that day, a couple of hours or more, over 2 hours, lovely lunch. That's what Swami was doing on the floor, walking around, making sure everyone had enough to eat and enough to drink. And it was...
And what was Swami's reaction when you demonstrated the boomerang in the Poonachandra auditorium?
Well, it was hard for me to determine that because you really have to focus when you're throwing and you're indoors. So I really can't tell you. But afterwards, he must have been in some way pleased if we think we know what he's thinking, which we don't, but he said, how many boys want to learn this?
Oh, Swami himself asked.
He said that.
Okay.
So dozens and dozens and dozens of hands shot up in the air. And that starts the next part of the story, really.
Let's move on to the next part of the story.
Well, the next morning, I go to Darshan. He said, I'll see you in the morning. He comes through the ladies' side, takes some letters through the men's side, some letters over to where the other men are sitting in wheelchairs, then up onto the veranda. So I'm thinking, what did he mean? Did he mean this morning? He said, I'll see you in the morning. Does he mean before I leave Prashanti?
Where were you sitting?
I was sitting about 10 rows back.
Okay.
And so I was wondering. And then suddenly two students, I think they were, raced out from the veranda looking for someone. I was hoping it was me. I sat up as tall as I could on my cushion. And they said, come, with their hand signals.
Okay.
And I came up. Later on, I found out that Swami had said, where's that boomerang man? So then I went in there was a small group interview, and then he took us in for individual interviews into the inner room. And another amazing, amazing time.
Wow.
You know, sitting there talking with him.
So you had half an hour or more with Bhagwan?
Yes, all in total there, yes. My private interview was probably only 10 minutes. But I think I can tell you that what he really shared with me for my benefit was to have no doubts. And I feel now when you reflect on these messages, and sometimes you have to years later for them to mean more, the significance was that I had to have no doubts about myself. Or my ideas, or my creativity. And because he talks about self-confidence, he says how important it is. So have no doubts. That was the main message he gave me that day. And it's a really important one. I think we can all take something from that.
Yes.
Because at times we can have doubts about many things. But he said, have no doubts. He said it about 5 times. Okay. I think.
And when you look back, do you think that was something that was needed at that point in time, or did it mean much to you later?
I think it means things as you go along, because when you're thinking about a new project, when you're perhaps thinking of taking a journey, a trip somewhere, you might have a doubt about a detail, you might have a doubt about being able to pay for it. All those little things can come into your thoughts. We have so many thoughts each day. So if the avatar has said, have no doubts, you have a fairly strong message about which approach to take to all these things.
So definitely when you have no doubts and no fears, your confidence levels are high. And perhaps that is what would have, if I can say, helped you in your journey with boomerangs and in general in life. So how has life been after that? You stayed for how many days in 1993 in Puttaparthi?
Oh, in 1993, I believe it was about 3 weeks.
3 weeks you were there?
Yes. And it was most interesting, most interesting.
So did you teach the students during that trip?
Yes, on the day after the interview, after all those boys had shot their hands up into the air to learn, I went to the high school and then onto the Hillview Stadium. And a group of boys were there ready, and I had the bag of boomerangs with me, and we started the teaching process. Yes. And after we'd finished, we were walking back through the school there, and someone suddenly said, Swami's coming, Swami's coming. And great excitement, and we all stood still, and his car drove along.
Okay.
And I got the message that Swami wants you to do some more throwing.
Mm-hmm. So Swami was in the ground.
He was in the car.
Mm-hmm.
He came around to see. And apparently he had, I presume he had a VIP with him.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some netball courts there. I pulled out a very small boomerang, short range, threw it, circled it twice, and then caught it.
Mm-hmm.
I did it again and was wondering if that was okay. And he waved. He waved at me.
Oh, Swami
paid
yes, that.
He waved. And I waved back just naturally. I thought, you know, why not? And then he drove off. Yes.
Wow.
So that was, so I had three consecutive days, the Punachandra and the interview and then the stadium.
Wow. He asked the boys, how many of you want to learn? Yes. And now when they're actually learning, he came and he blessed them and he blessed you.
Yes.
And he blessed the boomerangs.
He must, I presume he's blessed the boomerangs.
Definitely.
I presume. Yes. Yes.
Wow. Presume. That way the boomerang has been a very powerful tool. It has brought you to Swami, given you so many opportunities with Swami.
It's taken me on so many journeys. So many journeys. To all those countries you mentioned earlier.
Yes.
To Swami. And, if we may say the obvious, it keeps bringing me back to Prashanti.
Yes. Yes. So, and it brought you back. Again, after 1993, when was that?
Yes, 94, for 94. Sports Day.
Hmm.
And there's a performance of students.
So, 93, you taught the students, but there was no performance.
No.
So, 94, that happened. So, yes. Tell us the story of 94.
Well, I came about 2 weeks before Sports Day, and they wanted to talk about the boomerangs. And because I'd arrived, they said, look, sir, perhaps we can do something at Sports Day. Can you help us, and do we have time? So we did as many teaching sessions as I could, and a group were prepared, and I'd sent boomerangs over from Australia before.
Okay.
And they did a small performance during the sports meet.
Okay.
Mm.
Wow.
And that's on a film.
Yes.
Yes, as you know.
Yeah. In fact, after you mentioned, I did see the film.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and it's really nice. Swami is sitting on the chair and Swami is watching so keenly. And Swami mentioned something actually sitting on the, watching along with the guests,
right.
When the boomerang was going on. I could not really make out much from the video, but definitely he seemed so excited and interested. Beautiful. I think that was a unique opportunity to present in front of Bhagwan.
It certainly was. And he gave our cameraman, we had a small crew from, Chennai, and, we had a wonderful camera position.
Mm.
And, of course, some of those shots are used in another film as well.
Mm.
Yes.
Mm. Wow. So, 94 was the time when the boomerang was formally offered to Swami as a performance.
Yes, at the sports meet.
At the sports meet.
Yes.
And so, how was it after that? Did you come back again?
Yes, I came through again in 95.
Mm-hmm.
And
did that film happen?
Yes, it did. It's called The Miracle of Puttaparthi.
The film on Swami's hospital.
On the hospital.
When was that released?
That was released in 94. Guru Purnima, 22nd of July in Sydney.
Okay.
We finished making it in Sydney, that film.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been on Mnet, satellite TV in South Africa.
Okay.
It's been on ZTV in Europe and UK.
Okay.
And in those days it was VHS.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to sell copies from the house and mail them to different countries, about 24 different countries.
Wow.
Mm.
Wow.
Mm.
Amazing.
And it's been enjoyed by, in particular, architects because of the beautiful sacred architecture there.
Mm.
And the medical world because of the beautiful medical services, facilities, and gift that Swami has given in that free hospital.
Mm.
People love that. Medical people, they know the standards are so high.
Mm.
And so, yeah, that film has, it's a documentary for television, actually.
Mm. So that way, a lot happened in this 2 years.
A lot happened, that's right.
Because you got involved with a documentary concerning Bhagwan's work.
Mm-hmm.
So that has something to do with healthcare. And then you got involved with education, something to do with Bhagwan's students and sport. And I think when both are two pillars of Bhagwan's mission, healthcare and education, and you had the opportunity to straddle both these things and had Swami's blessings. Beautiful. So 95, what happened?
I think I was then on my way through to Australia, and I just stopped over, and I think I do remember getting a front line in Darshan, and Swami coming over. I mean, after all those experiences, coming over and asking, "Where are you from?" So he does this, doesn't he? Yes. And we sometimes think we're clever, and we may answer from Atma, Swami. Yes. And he might say, "No, no, no, country." But I said, "I'm from Australia."
Okay.
Yeah. And then suddenly he circled his right hand and made vibhuti for me.
Okay.
Which was white in color.
Hmm.
And so I just accepted that, and of course, then he moved on, moved along. Hmm.
So you are definitely marked and blessed.
Well, these are all interpretations, aren't they? I felt very good. I felt wonderful.
Absolutely.
Yes, I felt wonderful.
You come after a year and Swami physically recognizes you and, you know, gives you something. The first trip he gave you a sweet, and now he gave you vibhuti.
Mm.
So you're very much there in his eyes whenever you come. So I think that is definitely such a heartening feeling. So from then on, Swami perhaps would have always been with you in some way or the other, right, in your life. And you've come back to Parthi after that, and you've come back today after so many years. So how has Swami been with you all these years? How have you felt him?
Well, I came back several times, and then, as you say, today. For all of us, it's a personal journey. It's an inner journey. It's heart to heart. And for me, Swami, as well as being the avatar, I also see him as the universe.
As the universe?
Yes. So if I'm giving gratitude, which I like to do every morning, gratitude for my life, for my friends, for my family, for the experiences of the day ahead, I like to give gratitude in advance. I'm thanking the universe, which for me is thanking Swami. So for me, they are similar. We're talking about energy, though, aren't we? We're talking about energy. We are talking about love. And we are talking about that combination of the unfathomable, but which is real in everyday life, if you have the faith. And I think if you give the gratitude. That's the attitude that I like to adopt on a daily basis. And,
Wow. I think that is beautiful. Two things are very striking to me. One is that you always have this confirmed faith and belief that Swami is the universe. Mm. And that is what is, as Bhagwan says, the Vishwarupa of the Lord. On one occasion, when Swami told someone, "Do you want to see the Vishwarupa?" And that boy said, "Yes." And then all Swami did was, Swami just showed his hand outside the car window. And Swami said, "That is the Vishwarupa." And you live with this feeling that, you know, everything around that you see is Swami. I think that's a very, very enlightened way of living. Beautiful. And the second thing is this attitude of gratitude. How has this attitude of gratitude helped you in your life? What impact has it done in your life?
Well, I think gratitude can link with confidence and positivity. And these are qualities which, I mean, obviously, as we know, there's ebb and flow in the world, in the daily life. But if we can have an underlying belief system like this, an underlying gratitude, it can help all the time, because difficulties come up. Happiness comes up. Joy comes up. Sadness comes up. All those things arrive in our lives. And it's how we react to them. It's how we respond inside to how well the journey is in that moment and in that hour and obviously in that daytime. There's really hardly much more you can expand on that. The messages, Swami's messages, are so simple. They don't require They don't require big houses and big things. They just require the heart-to-heart with him and the universal energy, and to try and be consistent with that gratitude, that attitude of gratitude. Consistency is absolutely important. And you're also taking steps towards him in doing that all the time. He takes them towards you then. And so it's also something I can see as a message on a boomerang.
Mm-hmm.
Gratitude's the attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's that giving out each day. It's that sending out that message to God, and something's coming back.
Wow.
Mm.
Beautiful. I would like to think that if we always count our blessings, then so many blessings would be showered on us that it would really become uncountable.
Mm.
Because everything comes back. And I think if we do something for someone, it definitely comes back. But if you do something for the Lord, perhaps it comes back 3 times or 20 times or sometimes 100 times, sometimes some million times, because God is very gracious. And so I think this feeling of every time you throw a boomerang, you know, you are just giving out this gratitude to the Lord is a very powerful exercise which converts the art of boomerang into a sadhana.
Yes. Yes, it has that level, doesn't it? It's that philosophical, that metaphorical level of energy going out and coming back.
But do you always feel like that whenever you work with the boomerang?
Well, not always. Sometimes if I'm competing in a sport, I'm really focused. I'm really concentrating on doing my absolute best. So, but like sport though, if that type of gratitude and belief is ingrained in you, then it probably forms a part of that throwing anyway.
Yes.
You can be conscious of it and think consciously in that moment of gratitude. But if you're doing that most days, then when you're throwing, it's happening.
It's happening.
It's happening.
It's becoming part of you.
It's becoming part of you. And it's a beautiful thing for me to just throw a boomerang and catch it. Throw a boomerang and catch it. It's like you have to be in the moment to do that.
Yes.
You have to focus on that release. Then you watch the flight and then you catch. And it's almost time stopping still or standing still, almost time standing still, or like maybe a moving meditation.
Even. Oh, yes.
Mm.
Yeah, because you need complete focus.
Yes, you do. And you can find out, well, after you've experienced, you're an experienced thrower, you can find out in an instant how the result might be.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't throw so well, it doesn't return as accurately.
Plenty of lessons.
Plenty of lessons. And quite quick ones too.
In fact, I was reading a discourse of Bhagwan where Swami says that we often try to blame some person or some incident for the injury or loss we suffer, but the real reason is our own karma, our own action. And Swami says when the background of the event is known, the impact can be lessened or even negated. So basically, Swami is saying that you should welcome everything with equal-mindedness, because everything that you experience is what is something that you have created for yourself. And that is what is the boomerang telling us, isn't it?
And isn't it challenging, though, to accept like a small accident or something that is part of our journey? It's hard to accept.
Yes.
And the other thing I think is challenging is that we don't know our karma.
Yes.
And we don't know anyone else's. Even though we're blaming them or we're trying to improve their lives, we don't know their journey.
Mm.
And so just to try and live in the moment, I know it's a cliche, but it is a good thing to try and do regularly, to hold the focus and be conscious of what we're doing. If we're eating, eat. If we're running, run. And These are the kinds of things that we do each day. If we're working, we work. Right. And
living very consciously in the present.
Yes. And I think it's now being called mindfulness.
Yes, mindfulness.
This is what, well, not now. It's been called that for a long time, but yes. It's...
People are discovering
yes.
these ancient
yes.
Practices and ideas now more than before, I think.
Because they're needed more and more, aren't they?
Yes.
As we look around.
Needed.
As we look around.
Yes.
If we want to look around in the world.
Yes.
Yes.
And you are someone who did a lot of research in these philosophies and what our ancient culture was, because you are someone who spent a lot of time trying to find out about the boomerang heritage, and you spoke to aboriginals in Australia, tried to find out about their culture and their practices. So are there some things which got present to you, which got revealed to you, and which you think are something which the current generation should know?
I've had the privilege of being very well received by various Aboriginal elders throughout Australia since about 1983.
Okay.
So way back then, yes. And because I have the sense that they know when someone is sincerely interested in their culture.
Mm-hmm.
So you are welcomed and told certain things if you need to hear them. But it's, to answer your question, it's a bit challenging, that question, in that do they have a message for the current society? Well, I shouldn't speak for them, of course. For different elders, I can't speak for them. What I've gained, though, as a person and a traveller, is that they lived very close to nature. They have a great connection with the cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
They respect the environment.
Mm.
They live hand in hand with the environment. And they used, of course, natural materials to make everything. But there's a lot about their spiritual worlds that we don't understand.
Mm.
And, well, that I don't understand. And that they don't always share those things because of so many bad experiences in the past. With people coming into the culture and trying to take from the culture or destroy the culture even. But for me, it's also meeting with Aboriginal men in particular. That's a natural thing as well. I've gone to Broome, right up in the west, northwest of Australia, central Australia. I've lived out there in Alice Springs, and I've got to know artists, artifact makers. And you just feel this great wisdom in these men.
Mm.
And they're not necessarily telling you things or telling you stories so much, but just to be welcomed, just for them to share some knowledge about boomerangs is a great gift. That's been a great gift to me. And it continues, actually. It hasn't stopped, but it started back in 83.
Mm. And it's interesting also to know that the boomerang has such a long history.
The heritage is, what words can we use? Can we imagine cave paintings or rock art, it's called, rock art, 25,000 years BP or before present?
Wow.
This is ancient, obviously.
Hmm.
And in South Australia, in 1974, some artifacts were found, some boomerangs. And they're carbon dated to just around the 10,000 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. They were preserved in peat and a peat bog, and they're in the South Australian Museum. Been preserved because they've been freeze dried. But this is the ancientness of the culture. And you can be looking at a boomerang whose, the way it's been manufactured has lasted for thousands of years.
Mm.
And there are special ways to make the old boomerangs. And The old men were given these gifts as well. They knew how to use the stone tools. And they would chant when they were making.
Mm-hmm.
They would be able to select the right wood, of course, from the right trees. And it goes through a whole process. And this is what makes these artifacts so special, when you can find old ones. I have a collection of old ones as well. And just to connect with them, I find wonderful. I find that very, very moving. And I might be out in the outback again in the next few months, meeting with some men. And I'll probably be meeting some on the coast in the next month when I go back to talk about boomerang making. And to make sure their skills are not lost, I want to preserve that. I want the world to be able to say, well, this has been happening for thousands of years. And this is what these Aboriginal people have done to show us this amazing implement. I mean, look what we have. We have ancient aerodynamics.
Yes.
We have the perfect construction of these implements. And we have this magical, I think that's the word.
Yes.
Magical quality of the returning boomerang.
Absolutely.
It fascinates people in every country I've ever been in because they can't quite believe it. They've heard about it. Oh, could that be possible? When you show them, and you can only show a few, unless you're on YouTube or something, they are amazed. It actually works. This is not some fantasy, some fairy story, some fairy tale. It is a true implement of the ancient Aboriginal culture.
And they were able to perhaps develop it because of that connection they had with nature, connection they had with cosmos. I think in some ways they understood everything around them at a much deeper level than we, perhaps after all these years of advancement in science, still haven't got it.
Yes, we've gone away from that natural connection with nature and the cosmos. Many people have that, though, now. But yes, I agree with you. I'm sure it's the singing of the boomerang, the chanting, the special ways to make it. The qualities of those old artifacts are surprisingly wonderful, beautiful.
And it's amazing. It's really heartening that, you know, you're someone who's trying to preserve this culture, preserve this knowledge, preserve this magical instrument. So when did it happen that, you know, you sort of fell in love with boomerang? When did boomerang zoom into your life?
Well, it was in 1976 when I was a sports instructor at that Myuna Bay Recreation Center.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it started.
Yeah. So you saw a boomerang and you got fascinated with it, or?
It was part of the teaching program for the children.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a sports and cultural center.
Mm-hmm.
And so the basketball and archery, boomerangs, singing, all sorts of activities, recreational activities for children.
Mm-hmm.
So I became interested. I had to teach it, so I had to learn it.
Mm-hmm.
Another teacher showed me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was hooked. That was it. There I was. The window opened to Aboriginal culture.
Mm-hmm.
I eventually got into the sport because I've always been a sports person,
mm-hmm.
in athletics,
okay.
in horse riding, in cricket, in tennis. Yes.
Wow. And you had the chance to present your sport to Swami.
Yes. Yes, amazing.
That's amazing.
Incredible.
So now over the years, you've been successful in taking the boomerang and its philosophy to so many countries. How has this journey been?
It's the most wonderful thing to arrive at a school. Just for example, New Zealand. I met a gentleman there in the World Masters Games when I was competing in athletics.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you've got to come. I'm teaching at a school in New Zealand. Come over and we'll have you throw for the children. Well, it's just marvelous because they haven't seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
But they know the word. Most people have heard the word.
Yes.
They know the word and they've got an idea of what it's supposed to do.
Yes.
And then you come along, give a little talk. They might ask a question, and then you throw. And they're amazed. Look at this. Wow. And you can't always teach all these big groups, but at least you can show them. Throw some and catch some.
Mm.
And they get the idea. In another circumstance, for example, I was in Holland, the Netherlands, and I was asked to teach the 10 leading people in a big company. And they'd heard about it, of course. They were adult and well-read people. And so they were amazed. But there I spoke to them about the metaphor.
Mm.
What you give out comes back.
Mm.
The dynamics of the boomerang flight.
Mm.
How this can help your business.
Okay.
All of those themes are used in that presentation.
Wow.
And then we went on to the fun, the throwing.
Mm.
And we threw indoors because it was a really snowy sort of a day. And they had a lot of fun there. So for me, it's the reward I receive is the fun that they have.
Mm.
And I think it's almost without exception. When people want to look at this, they're interested. They're not sure about it. Is it possible? Does it work? How does it work? And then we show it. And it's been delightful. It always is, yes.
So you always try to mix this fun and the wisdom.
Yes, where it's appropriate.
Yes.
But even with young primary school children, you can tell them something. You've got to try and really focus and use your thoughts. And you can say what you give out comes back. They understand.
They understand. Yes.
I mean, I've taught 10-year-old, 9-year-old children in a formal classroom.
Mm.
They're very wise, some of those children.
Mm.
They understand. And also for your performance, as I said to the students just this week, we have to use our thoughts, our conscious mind, to visualize this perfect flight going out and back. Now, yes, they're only beginning, but why not tell them that straight away? That, yes, there's the physical aspect.
Yes.
But get into our thoughts, this flight out and back. So once I've thrown some and they've seen it, they can then visualize a great throw for themselves.
First, do it in your mind.
Do it in your mind. Because as you know, most sports at the higher levels, there's a lot of mental aptitude required, a lot of focus, and it's that strength in the mind sometimes which takes you to the next level and to a good performance.
Yes. After a point, I think every sport becomes a mind game.
I think so. Yes.
And
including this one.
Including this one, and this one has everything, and this one has those spiritual lessons. So I think that is really amazing the way Swami has blessed you with this instrument, and through this instrument, in some ways, you have become an instrument to share his message, share the God's message. So that must be a very, very fulfilling experience for you, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And you can do it. You don't even have to mention Swami. You don't have to mention God. The gratitude, gratitude's the attitude, I think, is a strong one for me personally. And it's represented by the boomerang flight. And, of course, if I'm in touch with Psi people, yes, of course. I tell them the story, don't I, to start with.
Mm-hmm.
It's very satisfying, yes.
Amazing. So you've come back to Prashanthinilam, boomeranged back to this holy hamlet, and you said Prashanthinilam is something which is a place to reconnect in so many ways. And you've been here for some time now. So what is it that you're going to take in your heart as you leave Prashanthinilam in this trip, February 2015?
It's been wonderful to reconnect with some Psi family. But on top of that, really, I always like to see the staff that I've met here before, particularly Professor Shiva Shankara Sai and Professor Lakshmi Narasimham, and to reconnect with them, because they literally were Swami's instruments to take me to meet him that day. But the message is that we need to keep serving.
Keep serving.
And even though Swami's not here in form, and that's, it's our heart-to-heart connection which sustains us.
Yes.
And it's personal. We have different connections with Swami and the universe, as I mentioned. And it's that attitude of service, in small ways, bigger ways, individual ways, that we can help our fellow men and women on the journey. And it's just good to be back in India.
Just that
normal sort of traveler's perspective. I've always got along well with the people here I've met. I've been into Rajasthan. I've traveled around a bit, quite a bit. Delhi and Mumbai and Madras when it was Madras and Chennai. And Mahabalipuram and different places. And I just have an affinity. And I don't pretend to understand the complexities of the culture. No. But I have an affinity with the people, and I enjoy that. And why not come back to somewhere you feel at home?
Well, India is home. And you don't know why.
Well, only for those normal human reasons I've mentioned. Plus, of course, ultimately,
yes. This
is God's village.
Yes.
Ultimately, that connection.
That connection.
Yes.
Prashanti Nilayam is in India.
Prashanti Nilayam.
So you will keep coming back to India again and again.
I will keep coming back again and again.
Beautiful. It's really amazing that you have had this chance to interact with Bhagwan, and now he has given you this opportunity through this beautiful instrument of boomerang to share this message of gratitude to wherever you go, and that is so much needed. And I think, as you mentioned, service, when we share this attitude of gratitude, we are serving the universe and we are serving Swami. And that is what you are spending all your time and life now. So it's really amazing. So did you think you'll actually be in Radio Sai and sharing all this morning?
No, I didn't know about that. No. But Swami, I must say to you that since 93, he's always taken me behind the scenes. So I see students. One year I came and I was invited to see the drama competitions in the college. I've never seen that before.
Mm-hmm.
I was the only foreigner sitting there. So for some reason I always end up behind the scenes.
Mm.
And that is particularly special.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because God always loves to surprise us with something beautiful.
Yes. Yes.
And this is definitely a beautiful gift for all the Radio Sai listeners. So thank you so much for coming to the studios and sharing your journey with the boomerang. And I hope this message of gratitude, this message of service, this message of fun while giving and receiving is something that should boomerang in all our lives. And that is something perhaps is the message that Swami is giving all of us through you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very, very much. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
Tune into Sai. Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Salam, dear listeners, and welcome back to the segment Morning Glory of today's Thursday Live. The time right now in our studio is 10:40 a.m. and today is 5th of November. Well, today in this segment Morning Glory, you heard a conversation with Mr. Paul Bryden, and in conversation with him was Radio Sai's Bishop Prashti. This conversation was recorded on February of this year. Well, dear listeners, we hope you loved the conversation with Mr. Paul, and as you heard from his story, it was Boomerang which brought him close to Bhagwan, which gave many opportunities to him to interact with Swami. Well, dear listeners, as I was listening to this conversation with Mr. Paul, we see how Boomerang became an instrument because of which Mr. Paul came to Swami. In fact, in people's life, there are either many instruments or unique incidents or because of few people that people come to know about Bhagavan. And as I was listening to this, I was reminded of one more Westerner who came to Swami and in an unusual way, and the instrument because of which he came to Swami was a rainbow. This Westerner was Mr. Joel Riordan. He was a Hollywood filmmaker and director. In fact, Mr. Joel, he says that his parents were show people. That means he was born and brought up. He was brought up in a circus, and he was always interested in magic tricks and conjuring, and he always knew the tricks that is played by the magicians, and he was always interested in it. And his wife was Swami's devotee, and his wife always told Joel about Bhagwan's divinity. She told that Swami is God, and Joel never believed it. In fact, he always thought that Swami was just like another magician. He thought that Swami always did tricks. And in fact, he called Swami as a character. And so, he decided once to come to Puttaparthi, to India, with his wife, and expose this character. Just before coming to Puttaparthi, he had visited one of his friend's house, and he told his friend, "See, I'm going to Puttaparthi to expose this character." He always called Swami as a character. And his friend asked him, how are you going to do it? And for this, Joel said, "See, this character says he is God, so I'll tell him to create something which only God can make." And with this intention, he, with his wife, comes to Puttaparthi, and they stay in Puttaparthi for a couple of days, and during those days, he has Swami's darshan. And one fine day, he goes outside into the village of Puttaparthi, in the countryside. He, along with his wife, goes for a stroll. And it was a bright, sunny day. And suddenly, it all happens. A rainbow is formed in the bright, sunny sky. Well, to form a rainbow, as most of you know, there should be some moisture in the sky. There should be some water droplets, something like a drizzle, because of which the sun rays, the light comes in contact with moisture, and because of reflection, refraction and dispersion of light, a rainbow is formed. But that day, there was no moisture at all in the sky, and it was bright sunny day, and a perfect rainbow is formed in the sky. And Joel is awestruck. And he shows his wife also to see the rainbow, and his wife also sees the rainbow clear in the sky. And then they come and have Swami's session. Swami calls them for an interview. And the first question Swami asks Joel was, "Yes, Mr. Character, did you see your rainbow?" And Joel was aghast. Well, but Joel didn't directly believe in Swami. He thought maybe this is just a coincidence. And mentally he was thinking, okay, let Swami create something different, something out of season fruit. In fact, Joel was just thinking about it. He didn't even tell Swami. And Swami looks at Joel, waves his hand and creates a fresh fig. Well, when Joel was there at Puttaparthi, it was not the season of the fruit fig. And in fact, Joel later found out that at Puttaparthi, the figs don't grow. And this was enough for Joel to get convinced that Swami is none other than God in human form. Well, dear listeners, just like how Boomerang was an instrument for Paul Bryden to come close to Swami, it was rainbow and fig or something like that, which which convinced Mr. Joel about Bhagwan's divinity. So, dear listeners, once again, let's come back to the segment Morning Glory, and after the conversation with Mr. Paul Bryden, in conversation with him was Radio Sai's Vishu Prashti, and after the conversation, taking the segment forward, I'll be now playing for you few audio specials which was composed here at Radio Sai as a part of Swami's 90th birthday. And after that audio special at 11 o'clock, you will be listening to Professor G. Venkatraman's musings.
The 90th year of Bhagwan Baba's divine advent is here. What are you planning to offer at his lotus feet? How about a gift wrapped in red? If you wish to partner with the Sai Healthcare to save a precious life, please take the time to donate blood at the Sri Satya Sai Super Specialty Hospital whenever you are visiting Puttaparthi. The blood bank is open Monday through Saturday, 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Every single day, patients undergo life-saving procedures here, and a pint of blood can make all the difference. Let's build a favorable blood inventory. If you're a healthy adult, please donate. For more information, please visit psg.sssihms.org.in. Blood, it's in you to give. Please donate. Sai Ram.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Prema Swarup Lara.
Happy, 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 be happy. Happy, happy, make others happy. All will be happy. God will be happy.
Saishwaraya Vidmahe.
Good.
प्रसाद जप आदि सच जुगाद सच है भी सच नानक होसी भी सच।
Krishna, Krishna, kaun ne sang jodo, jo tum todo piya, main nahi todo re, to se preet tode Krishna, kaun sang jodo. Krishna kone sang jodo jo tum todo piya main nahi todo re to se preet tode Krishna kone sang jodo Krishna kone sang jodo तरुवर मैं भये पतिया तुम भये सरोवर मैं भये मछिया तुम भये गिरिवर मैं भये छारा तुम भये चंदा मैं भये चकोरा जो तुम तोड़ो पिया मैं नाही तोड़ो रे तो से प्रीत तोड़े कृष्णा कौन संग जोड़ो कृष्णा कौन संग जोड़ो
मुरली मनोहर
हम भये धारा तुम भये सोना हम भये सुहागा भाई मीरा के प्रभु जी ब्रिज के बासी सुनो हे गोपाल सुनो हे गोपाल मैं तेरी दासी जो तुम तोड़ो पिया मैं नहीं तोड़ो रे तो से प्रीत तोड़े कृष्णा कौन संग जोड़ो कृष्णा कौन संग जोड़ो
गिरिधर हो मीरा के प्रभु Giri dar, giri dar, giri dar, giri dar, giri dar.